Good evening, everyone. Broadcasting live, October 13th, 2015. I'm gonna go with another Dhammapada video tonight. Testing, testing. Hello and welcome back to our study of the Dhammapada. Today we continue with verses 85 and 86, which read as follows. Appakate manusesu ye jana paragamino atayang itara pajatirame vanudhavati ye jako sammadakkate dhamme dhammanuvatino te jana parame santi machuddheyang suduttarang. These verses are a common chant in Thailand, so quite familiar. These and the next ones in the chapter. So these two mean apakate manusesu, few are they among humans, ye jana paragamino, who go to the farther shore. Atayang itarapaja, these other humans, other people, dhirame va anudhavati, simply run up and down the shore. Ye jako samadakkate, but those who sammadakkate dhamme, in regards to the well-taught dhamma, dhammanuvattino, are those who go according to the dhamma. Te jana parame santi, these people go to the farther shore. Majudeyang suduttarang, these cross to the other side. Majudeyang, to the king of the kingdom of death, which is very hard to cross. So we have some imagery here, the imagery of crossing an ocean. And now most people just run up and down the shore. Dhiram is this shore. Anudhavati is running up and down. So this was given in regards to another very short story. It's rather more of a remark that the Buddha gave in regards to the habits of those who would come and listen to the Dhamma. Seems that there was a specific group of people who came to listen to the Buddha's teaching. They had done good deeds, or they had supported the monastery, and so they came and gave alms to the monks and then stuck around intending to listen to the Dhamma all night. And there would be teachings of the Dhamma where the monks would take turns giving talks all night, or maybe even one monk would talk all night, probably the former. Probably it would be several monks taking turns. We once did this in Thailand, something like this. There were some ancient Buddha statues that were stolen. They were actually kept behind bars. They were quite valuable, but they were kept behind bars, and someone actually cut through the bars, or bent the bars or something, to steal these Buddha images. Cut through the bars, I think, to steal the Buddha images. And somewhat miraculously, one of them was found at the bottom of one of the rivers, I guess, like a small river, when it dried up or something in the dry season, it was found. And so they pulled it up and brought it back and did a, and had an all-night ceremony. It was something like this. I can't, the details are imprecise. I maybe never even paid too much attention to the details, but it was something like that. And so we had an all-night ceremony to honor the Buddha, or maybe to reestablish its sanctity or something, its holiness. I mean, it was a very cultural sort of thing that I didn't pay too much attention to. It may have been broken or something, and there was a fixing that had to go on, and at the end of fixing it, you have to re-bless it or something. But it was kind of considered a miracle that they got it back. And so it was a big deal. And all of the monks, I was a part of it, we would take turns chanting or giving talks or that kind of thing all night until the sun rose. So the spirit of this still goes on, even today. This idea of an all-night Dhamma thing. But it was sort of, I think it was Ajahn Tong that put it together. I don't know how often it happens. I know in Burma they do all-night chantings and all-night teachings, from what I hear. Anyway, the situation here was all of them were trying to listen to the Dhamma, but none of them lasted. Or maybe not none of them, but many of them were unable to last. Right, none of them. They were unable to listen to the Dhamma all night. Some of them were overcome by lust, sexual passion, and went home. Some of them were overcome by anger, boredom maybe. Now, anger is of many different kinds. It can be boredom, can be dislike of the Dhamma teachings, can be self-hatred at the idea that, you know, every time you hear something that hits too close to home, so you maybe they're talking about things that are unwholesome and you realize that you engage in some of those, and so you get angry at yourself and feel guilty and all these things. So being overcome with that, they were unable to stay and they went home. And some of them were overcome by mana, conceit. So that would be the feeling self-righteous and displeased by the Dhamma, but not an angry thing, just sort of feeling like they knew better than the monks, or these monks don't know what they're talking about, being attached to views and that kind of thing. Some of them got caught up with tinamida, so they got tired, that's a common one, and were nodding off and said, I realized that they had to go home is better. And so they went home in the middle of the teaching. And so they went off. The next day, the monks gathered and commented on this and just were sort of remarking on how difficult it is for people to listen to the Dhamma and how people aren't all that keen to take the opportunity to listen to the Dhamma. And the Buddha said, monks, for the most, the Buddha came in and asked them what they were talking about. And when they told him, he remarked that this is common for people. He said, for the most part, yebuyena bhavanisita. For the most part, they are dependent upon, or they are attached to existence, bhava, becoming. Bhavesu eva langa viharanti. They dwell stuck in bhava, stuck in becoming. The meaning here, bhava is a sort of a neutral term, that sort of a blanket statement for anything that leads to further becoming, right? So when you want something, on a very basic level, it leads to becoming here and now. You give rise to something new, which is the plan to get what you want. And you want to eat, and so suddenly the plan to make food arises. Maybe you want to watch a movie, so you plan to go out and to the, I guess people don't go to the video store anymore. You, whatever you want to go to Thailand, and so you give rise to something. This, but you give rise to more further becoming something that's not just functional, but it's actually a desire-based, a whole new set of variables. Or if you're angry, you give rise to something new as well, at the very least a headache, but you can also out of anger give rise to argument, friction, conflict, war even. Of course, war can be caused by greed, and often it's caused simply by greed. Conceit, you give rise to this competition or this sense of this conflict based on power struggle and desire for dominance, oppression, this kind of thing. Oppressing others, belittling others, that kind of thing. So you create this something new. Or you'd simply create a new plan for yourself. I deserve to be king, so I'm going to fight my way to become king. I deserve this or that, or I don't deserve this or that. And so you strive to accordingly. Sometimes it's just out of laziness. This gives rise to sleep, but it also gives rise to sickness. It gives rise to conflict and problems when you don't act according to your duties, where you just consume but don't produce. And as a result, people become upset because you're simply a consumer, a mooch, lazy, etc. And so on. So this is the idea of becoming. It's really anything that leads to. So there was a question recently about what's wrong with, or there's always questions about what's wrong with seeking out pleasure, ordinary pleasure, because you do get some. And it's really these two verses point to the mindset or the outlook of the Buddha and of Buddhists in general. Is that it's not enough, and it's not sustainable, because the more you want, as I said, the more you suffer, the less you get, or the less satisfied you are. And in fact, it's the wrong way, it's unsustainable. You find yourself bouncing back and forth, or for a time you're able to balance things before you fall one way or the other, and then it's back and forth again. And it's building up and disappointment, building up attachment, and stress, or it's working for a time to either repress. Often it's simply to repress our desires, and we fluctuate back and forth and go through life, or we go through lives again and again and again, or born, old, sick, die, born, old, sick, die. So this is sort of the outlook that the Buddha's basing this on. These two verses are actually one thing that stands out for me, besides the obvious symbolism or imagery, which is quite powerful, is sort of congratulatory. I mean, it seemed like a good opportunity to congratulate all of the people involved with this community. All of the listeners, all of you who are listening to the Dhamma, right? Taking the time, some of you every day to. I mean, it's not something I never thought would happen. I thought, okay, once a week maybe. But some people actually come out every day to listen to the Dhamma. You take the time to come online and sit still for an hour, half an hour, even to ask questions, so to get involved. To perform this act of good karma of asking questions, and many of you are very respectful, and so being respectful, and all sorts of good karma going on. And You know, that's something to be proud of, because even in the context of the story, these people are still to be congratulated because they tried. And it's not like they didn't hear some of the Dhamma, it's just they tried to do something beyond their capabilities. But all of the people here should be congratulated as well for having the good intentions. Many people don't even think about crossing. Or if they think about crossing, they never do anything to try to cross. They would never come and meditate. If you look at the list of meditators that we have, we've got, see how many we have tonight. We've got actually a fairly small list today. Uh-oh, and a bunch of orange people. Maybe I spoke too soon. What happened today? But still, we have many, many people, and we have people meditating on this site around the clock. People coming to listen to the Dhamma every day. So this is a sign of at least wanting to cross. Maybe some people just listen to the talks or watch my YouTube videos and maybe dip their foot in the water but don't ever cross. But at the very least, there's some thought, and this is the first step. The first step is thinking about it. Having the giving rise to the intention or the desire to better oneself, as opposed to just running up and down the shore. Because that's what it's like. That's what the Buddha likens most of our activity to, just running up and down the shore. Sometimes running up and down out of desire, sometimes running up and down out of anger, fear, worry, conceit. We have many, many ways of running around in circles. Running around in circles in the kingdom of death. And this is where we find ourselves, being born again and again, dying again and again. Learning and forgetting. Not really learning from our mistakes. So our intention here, our practice here, is to break that, to cross over, to go beyond death, to figure the system out, to come to understand the system, and to understand becoming, and as a result not be dependent upon it. One way of explaining why we're dependent upon it is because we don't understand it. We're dependent upon it because it runs us. We don't run it. We don't lord over death. Death lords over us, becoming as well. We act in such a way usually that we don't fully understand the system. We don't fully grasp what we're dealing with, or what's in store for us when we chase after things. And we're not clear in our minds as to the nature of our addictions and our aversions and our conceits and our views. And so we hold on to them often without a clear understanding, or usually without a clear understanding. Once we understand them clearly, this is the crossing over. This is the rising above. So it's rather a poetic verse, simple story, simple verse really, simple meaning. It's kind of a hard teaching, as it lays bare the fact that most of what we do is just running up and down the shore. It doesn't really accomplish anything in the end. But we should, on the other hand, it should be an encouraging teaching, because whatever the good things that we do, this is our coming closer to be one of those few people who is actually able to cross over. Is actually able to rise above and free themselves from the wheel of suffering, from the kingdom of death. So, good work everyone, and thank you all for tuning in and for supporting these teachings with your practice, for practicing and continuing on this practice. So that's the Dhammapada teaching for tonight. Thank you all for tuning in. Keep practicing and be well. Stefano's with me again tonight.
Hello.
Taking Robin's place. Do we have any questions?
Yes. First question is, the cat charity I do some volunteer work for are running a raffle to raise cash. You say that gambling is not in line with the teachings, but if the money raised goes towards helping running something good and makes everyone feel good, would that make a difference?
I think so. I mean, no one's going to come out saying, feeling bad about having donated, right? No one's going to come out saying, ah, oh, if only I had, you know. It's not exactly the same as gambling. It's not perfect. And I wouldn't say you're scot-free from all the unwholesomenesses of gambling, because you're encouraging greed in people still. It's like a white and black karma. That's definitely a good example of a white and black karma, because people are doing it out of desire to help, but also out of the desire to win. It's, you know, for most people, I don't think it's such a big deal that they win. They're just, it's a way of encouraging people, encouraging the people's intention. But you're encouraging it with a little bit of greed or excitement for, oh, what if I did win? Wouldn't that be kind of neat? I don't think most people buy raffle tickets thinking, yeah, I really want to win that, but I don't know, really. I think many people just do it to support the charity, which is the good part. Still, it's not how I would do things, not how I would support a charity, but or try to get a charity supported.
Hello, Bhante. When I am talking to someone in my thoughts while meditating, should I acknowledge this as talking or thinking? Thanks.
When you are talking to someone?
I think when they're talking to someone in their head, I think. Going over a conversation or something.
Yeah, I would still say thinking, right? Going over a conversation is more thinking. If you want, you can say talking. Again, the word is not the most important thing. Which word you pick, it's just something that keeps you objective. So it's not, damn that person who I talked with, or boy, I really love that person, really attracted to that person, etc., etc. Keeps you, whatever keeps you objective. So if it's talking, just say talking, talking. And you'll see that, oh, it's actually just a thought. Yeah, thinking is better, because you'll see that it's just a thought.
Or if they mean when they're actually talking to someone, what should they do in their thoughts? Like, how should they be mindful?
Well, you can be mindful of your lips moving, feeling. Be mindful of the feelings in the body and the emotions, the thoughts, the intentions to speak. Your mind is pretty quick, so you can do this all and still continue to talk.
When I have emotions, for example, anger, I know anger, and then I just know feeling, because it seems that there isn't anger, but just sensations.
Yeah.
Is this correct noting, or should I keep noting anger because it was anger?
That's awesome, yeah. No, that's very clear. All of the emotions are like that. They have physical counterparts, physical manifestations, and physical effects, and they are distinct from the anger and the greed and the worry and the fear and et cetera, et cetera. So acknowledge them separate, absolutely.
Sometimes during sitting meditation, I get very distracted because I am tired. I start to fall asleep. I find that I can focus better if my eyes are open. Does this take away from the point of meditation, or is this okay?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's not wrong. It's better to have your eyes closed when you can, but If you find it keeps you awake, it's really not wrong to open your eyes. It's better, of course, to overcome the drowsiness and keep meditating, but you can do it either way. I mean, your mind shouldn't be with your eyes anyway. It should be with whatever your object is. So with the stomach. In fact, in the end, it's probably just a trick, and it's not really the cause of your drowsiness. Once you get equally focused with your eyes open, you're still going to get drowsy. A better solution is probably to do walking meditation, I would think.
How long do you recommend a student practice your teachings on meditation according to your booklet before undertaking the formal study with you over the scheduled 101 one-on-one meetings via the internet? Thank you.
Take a week. If you've done a week of at least an hour a day, you know, two if you can, but at least an hour, 1 hour a day, then, I'm happy to help.
What's metta supposed to feel like? It kind of bothers me that I can't feel much metta, but I'm thinking I might have the wrong idea about what it is. Is it supposed to be sentimental?
Kind of, yeah. I wouldn't worry too much about it. Metta is something that comes naturally as you practice insight meditation. Be concerned more about insight. Metta is secondary. But, you know, focus, if you really want to experience it, focus on people who you know you have love for, like family members maybe, or good friends. It's a sense of friendliness, wishing for them to be happy, and good intentions toward them.
Does the process of samsara, death and rebirth, occur on other planets or in other solar systems?
I have no idea. Sorry.
And that's it.
Okay. I think we'll stop then.
Oh, wait. Maybe there is one more. Can you tell us the best way to help feed you currently? Is it through You Caring site?
No, the You Caring site is a project set up by Robin to help support the monthly expenses of just having a house, you know, having a place. So that's for things like rent and utilities. That's something fairly specific. Although it goes, that's the nonprofit organization that is run by a group of volunteers. So it's general. I mean, it can be used for various things, but it isn't used to support me, actually. Except insofar as I live here and depend very much on this place and the bills and so on. I mean, it's really a big thing. But yeah, Fernando has probably the right link. That's probably your best bet. I will say that I don't, you know, food is really not an issue at this point, though it's often the one thing that people would like to help with. It's not an easy thing. I mean, ideally, if you have a house somewhere nearby, I can come for alms one morning. Or even not so close. You know, I could find time to travel throughout Ontario. I suppose going to America for alms is a bit much. Although, you know, outside of the rains, I can take time to go and stay in someone's backyard during the hot season. But then it would be more like a trip than an alms giving. But barring that, you know, there's ways of, well, they've got to go to the food support. That's what we've figured out so far. And that's Tina is doing most of the organizing there, I think. But there's several people involved with that. Okay, so that's all for today. Thank you all for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stefano, for taking part, helping out. Have a good night, everyone.